Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Love's got the world in motion, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the World Cup Ramble, sponsored by Bet365. It's semi-final time. My name's Marcus Speller. Luke Moore's here.
It's one-on-one.
Jimmy Campbell's here.
Hello.
And Petey Donaldson.
Do it at the right time.
Couldn't think of a line quick enough, Jim.
No. Did I tell you this?
I just pictured John Barnes' massive head. It threw me.
Did I tell you a couple of weekends ago I was chatting to Peter Hook, who obviously featured on that track?
Right.
And John Barnes wasn't the first person to do that rap.
I heard this story.
Who was it?
But
Peter Beardsley.
No, really?
Not no, even kidding. I heard Peter Beardsley and Paul Gascoigne. So somewhere. Who's the fellow who did Fat Les?
Keith Allen.
Keith Allen. Somewhere in Keith Allen's attic there is a tip with Peter Beardsley doing that rap and also Paul Gascoigne doing that rap.
You've got a hold or give.
I'll say what I always say. It's never worth risking Keith Allen's attic.
No. But at the same time, I feel like there should be some sort of campaign to get that unearthed.
Yeah, massively. Apparently, they tried to release it on more than one occasion before, but the FA said, no.
They should have said, hang on a minute, we ain't no hooligans, this ain't a football song. Yeah. It's none of your business, FA.
A mate went round and interviewed him for a documentary, and Keith Allen insisted on making him use the Lily Allen toilet. There's a Lily Allen toilet, there's a Keith Allen toilet apparently around Keith Allen's house. And he had to use the Lily Allen toilet. And then he said...
Is there a Martin Allen toilet? Just for the dog.
Don't go in there, that's intent. Yeah.
He said, I've got to go now, I'll get a taxi. And Keith Allen went, no, I'll drive you to the train station. He goes, no, it's fine, it's only 10 minutes, fine. And he went, yeah, no, I'll drive you. And he was very insistent, and my mate was a bit scared of him. So he went, oh, I've got Screwfix first. And then basically he had to sit in the car while Keith Allen went round Screwfix. And then he missed the train by a good 50 minutes then.
He didn't say anything.
Yeah, he didn't say anything. So.
Speaking of Allens, I had a conversation with Martin Allen once.
Right.
That was so intense, it made me feel like a small child back at primary school. And it was in an office, and he was sat in the corner. And you know Martin Allen is every bit as intense as you expect him to be, because genuinely, he sat in the corner of a massive office on a chair, not doing anything, just staring. He's not looking at his phone, he's not reading, he's not picked up a paper.
Just being.
And someone stitched me right up, didn't they? Went over and said, Luke's a Portsmouth fan. And obviously Martin Allen played for Portsmouth. And he went, right, yeah, started talking to me. And I said, I made the mistake of saying, this is before Portsmouth entered League One.
Yeah, we will talk about the semi-final shortly, ladies and gentlemen.
Very, very quickly. I made the mistake of saying, I think I'd be happy for Portsmouth to finish mid-table, you know, stay in the league because they were promoted last season. And Allen was fuming. He was like, why? Why? And I was like, well, just because they got promoted, why? Name me two other good teams in it. There's none. There's no other good teams in it. Portsmouth should be going for the title, all right? I was like, all right. Wow. We had met like 10 seconds before that. I know they're not related, but Allens, just be wary.
Allens.
Don't even use an Allen key.
Well, hang on. What about brother of Carlos, Allen Valderrama?
Yeah.
Spelled differently.
Yeah. Okay. And also, he's still doing the announcements of transfers and things, isn't he?
Harry Maguire's brother.
Yeah, it's absolutely, mate. He's like a dad that's just got on Facebook.
Yeah,
sort of,
he is.
It's like coming to terms with how you use it.
I think it's him thinking, this is how modern managers work. I'm going to do something a bit out there. I'm going to do my own press releases. Because he manages Harry Maguire's brother, doesn't he? At Chesterfield.
That's right, yeah.
And made an announcement that he was going out there. He wouldn't be there for
Did pre-season. He say he had Russian flu?
Yeah.
Which was a nice touch.
Nice.
Yeah.
He'll be back at Barnet soon enough.
He will.
How many times has he managed Barnet? Five times?
He's always
gonna,
in their orbit.
He's never going to manage France. They're in another World Cup final.
Well, rightly so.
Yeah,
really deserved.
My goodness, eh? It's the third time in the last six World Cups, including this one, that they've reached the final.
Mm.
A decent record since they've turned it all round.
Yeah, it's funny how people were putting France among the favourites at the World Cup before it began.
Yeah, but they were right.
But they would be sort of like fourth on the list or fifth on the list. People were thinking, well, as long as they can sort of not tear themselves apart or not underachieve and underwhelm, then they'll have a chance. And that's exactly what's happened. Like, you know, a lot of people are sort of criticising their style, but I don't think they were as bad as people made out yesterday. Obviously, they got the goal from the corner, but there was that amazing Pogba shimmy that put Mbappe through. Mbappe was lively all game. He had that brilliant little back heel, Giroud. Was that the one he clubbed over the bar, or was that a different chance?
Giroud had a lot of chances.
Yeah,
I can see him scoring the winner in the World Cup final. Yeah. And it'll be the weirdest thing because he was so... He had his chances and he didn't put any of them away. He was very underwhelming.
He performs that role really well. It's just when he gets to the point where he's got to score, he just doesn't score.
He brings other.
Well, there's a touch in an England comparison, a bit like Raheem Sterling performs his role really, really well. There's just sometimes the cutting edge isn't there. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're obviously recording before England Croatia. Sterling might score a hat trick tonight, but it's unlikely. but yes, France, they're in the final, and as you said, Jim, the favourites going into the tournament were, for the vast majority of people, I think, were Brazil, Germany, Spain and France. And I just think it's mad that we only had one of them in the semi-finals. I mean, that is astonishing. Of course, France were in the final and are red-hot favourites. No matter who go through England or Croatia, you would fancy France all day long.
Absolutely.
But still, let's not forget that the fact that France are there, that this World Cup has been phenomenal, even if, of course, they win it.
And it's been phenomenal partly because of its unpredictability, which you mentioned there. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen next. And not least because, of course, England, we've got three teams left, which may be a sort of quirk of the scheduling at this point. But the fact is, there's three teams left and England are one of those teams.
Bronze medal in the bag.
And it's been unpredictable because a team like France, who Jim sort of pushes up on there and talks about, I think partly that is because they almost flattered to deceive a little bit.
Well, you want them to be an attacking side
with flair. Whenever they've done something... There's always been like a bit of a question mark. So even when they beat Argentina and were by far the better team,
they conceded three.
They only won 4-3, you know. And we saw that they had a performance like the one against Denmark in them as well.
So still annoyed at that. There's one,
same. Yeah,
really annoying.
And
0-0.
Last night, I felt like they were the better team and they deserved to win. And they controlled Belgium very well and dealt with Belgium's weapons like really effectively. And I'm sure we'll come on to Belgium in a minute. But they only won the game 1-0. And I would say, of course, because they're in the first team in the final and because, you know, around all those other favourites, they're the only team left in it. They've probably been the best team in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's not really been a standout team where you go, right, that's that. That's them. Mm. They're gonna do it.
I thought it was gonna be Brazil.
I did as well. So, I think and they just sort of failed to launch. Mm. They just sort of stuttered a little bit.
I think that pressure got to them. I think maybe you could even argue that Belgium were probably right up there in terms of the most impressive teams. But I think that's been one of the characteristics of this World Cup, isn't it? As we've been talking about throughout it, how unpredictable it's been. Aside from France yeah, have been that constant.
They've been very predictable.
But I still think they have. They've not almost. They're still playing with the shackles on a little bit. That's
absolutely
what I'm trying. That's what I'm trying.
Very, very much so. But yeah. I think it's because they haven't really needed to take those chains off, have they? Apart from against Argentina, and we were all talking about this on WhatsApp yesterday. But aside from the Argentina game, where the goals were a world class goal that you never miss out from Di Maria, a deflected goal, and also a very well taken half chance. I think you could even argue Aguero's goal later.
Messi linking with Aguero, that'll happen.
Yeah exactly. I can't really even remember a clear chance anyone's made against France.
Yeah, Fellaini had a good header yesterday.
Yeah,
fair. But I mean, that was the kind of exciting thing, wasn't it, when the game started. Belgium went at them.
Yeah.
And you thought, go on, lads, you know, because Belgium have had a wonderful tournament. Losing 1-0 to this France side in a semi-final of the World Cup is no disgrace at all. Belgium won 5 out of 5 as well. Beating Brazil, will that game and result will go down in Belgian football history, rightly so.
Yeah.
And you know, Belgium had 64% possession against France, which is surprising. I know France didn't need the possession, of course. They scored, you know, pretty early on in the second half. But they did try, but you just felt that they ran out of puff. And I think that this French side, they just ground them down. They basically just, every avenue into the second half, Belgium tried to go down. Okay, there was a couple of shots and Lloris parried away. But it was just like, every pathway we try and go down, there's Umtiti, there's Varane, there's...
Yeah. And there's Mbappe running it up the other end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why isn't Umtiti doing those handballs again?
Yeah. I know!
Maybe saving one up.
Well, Australia will say, well, come on, lads, we nearly got a draw off.
And they did, and they did.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't for VAR.
At the risk of descending into cliche quite so early in this show, is it not an example of this idea that goals win you games, but defending wins you tournaments?
Yeah.
Because France were, against Belgium, I thought... For the fact that they've got two quite inexperienced fullbacks who've really grown into the tournament, and the fact that they've got, as I said last time we were chatting, probably the best defender in the World Cup in Varane,
who did
an amazing job on Lukaku. Belgium, for all the creativity they've got and all the clever players they've got, thinking particularly Hazard and De Bruyne, it felt like France were a bit of a puzzle they couldn't solve.
Yeah, they were quite desperate by then.
Yeah, right? I thought so. And I thought they got more and more just desperate as the game went on, actually.
Well, and that's incredibly frustrating.
Taking Fellaini off the wheel. I mean, that's their plan B. They've started with a plan A. Like, they've got he's very much a very different proposition. And
should have brought him back on again. Let's reset everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're doing our plan B now. Yeah. Wasn't that plan A? Shut up.
Yeah.
But he got the header off, didn't he? And he should have probably put that away. I certainly tested the goal.
You never know what you're going to get with Fellaini. I think his unpredictability is a big part of his game, but in both penalty areas.
But should they have... I mean, on that, I understand that Fellaini started against Brazil and was a part of a brilliant Belgian performance. And in hindsight, you know, you can say this, that, or the other. But there is maybe an element of that. If you put Fellaini on the bench and Belgium needs something, you bring him on. It is going to cause a little bit of confusion or a little bit of worry. Maybe not. Umtiti and Varane look very steely operators. And Belgium maybe get a bit of a lift. But then, I suppose, tossing balls into the box against those French centre-halves, you're not going to get too much joy.
And Pogba is working back quite a lot. He had another good game.
I think he benefits hugely from having Kante next to him.
And not playing under Mourinho.
He's thrown off the yoke. The thing about Pogba is he seems, for some reason, and I'm all for it, for France in this tournament, by and large, he seems to make the right decision a lot. Mm. And he seems to not try and sort of try too hard, try and do too much. He seems to pull the right pass
looks
out.
More comfortable.
And I think defensively, France, with Varane, I mean, he's got everything in his locker, Varane. He's had difficulties with injury, I know, but on paper and in that game last night, it's like nothing seems to faze him. He's like operating on that quite a higher level than most other defenders. And you think Lukaku, who was very quiet, and maybe we'll talk a bit about him, his inconsistency and why that he's probably a little bit overrated because of that. Varane just dealt with him. It was no problem. And I thought the big mistake, actually, these sort of games, semi-finals or World Cups, are dealt with on really fine margins. And of course, we saw that in this game. There was one set-piece goal. And the fine margin, I thought, which I pulled out to you guys at the time, was it's bizarre to me that Martinez didn't have Lukaku defending corners. He would be a very, very useful weapon in defending set pieces.
They've got a lot of big boys back there.
They have, absolutely.
And on the breakaway, as we saw against Brazil, yeah, he's handy for that.
That's surely the
absolutely
reasoning.
But a huge part of Lukaku's game will be winning headers in an attacking sense and holding the ball up and dominating the possession and getting in front of a defender, all that kind of stuff. And he does that very well. I think if you put him in that textbook forward as a defender type position and a set piece, like he used to do at Chelsea with Drogba, like I think Kane might do as well. And we've seen loads of forwards do that. I think Lukaku actually deals with that ball in and France don't score. Now, I know it's easy to be wise after the event and they make a decision because they want to keep Lukaku up there as a threat and it's a bit of a gamble. I get that. But to me, that was the margin that the game rested on. And that's why Belgium are going home and France are in the final.
And also, I think France's game management was really good. They rotated the shithousery at the end of the game really, really well. Everyone was getting a yellow. Have you had a yellow yet? Right, it's your goal.
Can we get banned for the final? No,
we can't.
Yeah.
Dan actually got two yellows because the referee's very lenient. Very lenient.
And I think the refereeing has actually been fairly lenient throughout the tournament, hasn't it? One of the things I'm really impressed by with France as well is they've approached that game by going, Belgium have got a really, really potent attacking force here. Probably the most potent attacking force we've faced in the tournament. Let's use that to beat them.
Yeah.
I mean, just wait on the counter. And you still, you know, you get the sense that they haven't really been tested. And they remind me a little bit of a sort of classic Italy side. A lot of people have been comparing them to Germany, saying they're this tournament's Germany. And it's funny how these styles are very cyclical. They're not necessarily rotated around the same teams and same nations all the time. But, like, there are certain ways to win a World Cup. And it seems that will never change, however much tactics change and however different football becomes.
And last night, I thought it was a classy performance by them. It wasn't a sort of swashbuckling, knock the ball around, have 100 chances and score. I mean, I know they had a lot of shots.
Yeah, they could have won that 2 or 3-0 if the finishing had been a bit sharper.
But I think it was just classy because they were a level above Belgium. For all Belgium's good players, I think Deschamps got it exactly right. And I think you wonder whether Martinez didn't... It was funny because Martinez had such a successful game against Brazil that it almost created a problem for him. Because it was like, well, do I go back to what got me here? Or do I stick with what worked against Brazil?
But he knew how Brazil were going to play. Brazil were always going to attack. And Belgium on the break, as we saw, were very good. He changed the formation and he got it right. Rode their luck ever so slightly, but everybody needs a bit of luck. You know, France, you could say, you know, had an element of luck against Belgium. The ball not quite dropping for certain players and whatnot. Lloris making a great save. And he's had a fantastic tournament as well. My goodness. So you get past the back line, you've got him to deal with.
Mm. He's got a dragonfly in his mouth and he's still
it's amazing what he can do.
That was a power-up.
Special move.
He thought he was in a platform and it was a power-up.
Yeah. We've talked about the England fly. France have got a dragonfly.
It's funny, but everyone talks about him eating the dragonfly, but I don't mention that just after that he jumped on top of a mushroom and then punched a rock with his foot.
Exactly, yeah. It's amazing. But against Brazil, I suppose for Martinez, looking back on that, the tactics sort of presented themselves as an obvious option, whereas against France, what do you try and do? And France,
what do you think he should have done? Do you think he got it right and it just didn't work for them?
I think that's what it was, yeah. I think to go at France in the early stage was quite a good idea, actually. And had they have scored, and on another day they may well have done. I think France could have taken it to another level, as you say. So I don't think necessarily they got it wrong. I just think the better team won, and it was only the margins of a set piece.
Yeah, and I mean, you could say the same, but if it ended up 1-1, going to extra time, and then Belgium won on penalties, you sort of say, well, Giroud was having an off day. Lukaku had an off day. De Bruyne's drilled sort of cross, that wonderful cross-field drilled cross, and Lukaku just misjudged his speed, how quick he was arriving to the ball, and kind of like, in the end... It ended up kind of somewhere between his head and his chest.
Is that
a
De Bruyne
chest.
Cross?
Yeah, De Bruyne. Yeah, he completely drilled it. It was such a beautiful cross.
France,
he could have got something on that if he'd have judged it a bit.
Lukaku, there was a few times, but as I say, it just didn't quite drop for him. Mm. But France, again, you know, Griezmann dropping off, picking up the ball from the midfield, creates space for Mbappe and so on. They've just got quality and options and intelligence everywhere on the pitch. Mm.
And they are 4-6 favourites, as you'd expect, to win the tournament with Bet365. Now £10, returns £16.67, including stake, should you see him lift that trophy on Sunday night.
Eden Hazard said that he'd rather lose with this Belgium team than win with that France team. And Courtois said that, you know, football, words to the effect of, you know, football's lost here or something.
It's bullshit.
Yeah, it's absolutely nonsense.
I like watching Hazard play. I like his low centre of gravity and his massive arse and his skills. And he was probably the guy who looked most likely for Belgium, but he's not helping himself with comments like that.
I feel that, you know...
Mind you, sorry, Jim, he's probably warming up for the new job at Real Madrid now, Ronaldo's gone. Fill in those shoes. Yeah, it starts to make more sense when you think of it in those terms.
Get some digs in. Deschamps has been criticised basically throughout his tenure at France for effectively the same reasons he was criticised as a
just
player.
Functional.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But you know, they're very much in the image of their manager, and it turned out that he was one of those players that was appreciated a lot after the fact, wasn't he, for playing a sort of almost like Makélélé-style role in its functionality. And that's what he's brought to France, and you know, it is getting them success.
Absolutely, and I think there's almost like a bit of a disconnect or a lack of understanding here with when it comes to a team like France. Didier Deschamps' job isn't to get as many brilliant players into the team as possible. Mm. Oh, all of a sudden, France have got 500 brilliant players, so Deschamps has got to find a way to get them all in the team. That's not his job. His job is to win games and to win trophies. Now, of course, it'd be great if they played good football on top of that. Mm. I personally didn't mind watching them yesterday. I didn't think they were functional.
And they did give us that 4-3 against Argentina. We can't forget that.
Exactly. So Deschamps is the guy who is in a final now, 2 years after France were in a final 2 years ago. And that will stand France in good stead because I was listening to the Five Live last night and they were talking about how France maybe underestimated Portugal in 2016. Mm-hmm. And now they've got that experience of they probably won't do that again, even though they're going to be big favourites for the final. So all that comes into to play and makes you think that France are very, very strong favourites now to win the World Cup.
Yeah, a little word on Belgium. Have they... Maybe, I suppose, that win against Brazil would lead me to think that they've slightly overachieved at this tournament. But when I say overachieved, I suppose it's just been great to see those players actually express themselves on the international stage and reach a very, very respectable round of the tournament, you know, because they've flattered to deceive in previous tournaments with those players. And with Martinez as manager, people were wondering, is he going to be another one of these managers like Wilmots, who's not going to make them click and so on? But you have to say they've had a brilliant tournament.
They have.
And only being edged out by possibly the best team in the world at the moment, 1-0 in a semi-final, is no disgrace.
I tell you, they're going to have serious little brother syndrome, though, aren't they, against France. That would have been an absolute sickener for them to lose to France in particular, especially with this generation of players. But you've got to look at that team and think, well, this will feel like a missed opportunity. People have been backing them as dark horses for so long, they've actually become someone you'd back as potential winners. And you wonder about this Belgium team, and you look ahead to the Euros and think, you know what, they're going to be a contender for that as well. So there's still a chance for them to capitalise on this generation, I think.
Definitely. I think they've achieved exactly, when you asked me the question earlier, whether they've underachieved or overachieved, I think they've achieved exactly what you'd expect. Only one team can win it.
But having beaten Brazil, though, do you not think?
Yeah, but people were talking about Belgium as having the best squad of players in the tournament. Mm-hmm. So you have to take that into account. Brazil are Brazil, but I mean, Belgium were rated going into this tournament as being, in terms of the players they've got at their disposal, as being among the best. So to get to the semi-final, I don't think they've underachieved by getting to a semi-final, because I think, as you've alluded to there, you need a bit of luck along the way and only one team can win it.
And if Germany, Brazil and all those teams were still in it, you'd expect Belgium to be around about that level anyway. Yeah.
I suppose, having said that, I guess if they lost to Brazil in the quarter-final, you would instantly be going, oh, well, they sort of underachieved there. But
I think that'd have been hard.
It's partly because Brazil stumbled while Belgium were playing them in the first place.
That's very difficult as well, to beat Brazil and have to go and play France again. Yeah. You know,
that's the World Cup, though, isn't it?
That is the World Cup. Well, maybe we'll get a very, very fan-pleasing rematch of Belgium reserves v England reserves in the third place match. Hey, because England reserves won another go at
We've
that.
We've got a score to settle. Yeah, I heard Phil Jones was fuming about that.
All right, we will talk about Croatia versus England, everybody, after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Not today, Peter.
Not what? Today. I'm sorry. I've not named them. I've just numbered them, and that just happened to come in to my fingers. Well, my
welcome,
fingers on.
Welcome back to the World Cup Ramble, sponsored by Bet365, everybody. Croatia against England this evening.
I can't believe he's done that. I'm so sorry, everyone. On hashtag
you
Waistcoat Wednesday.
Jinx this, though, and it seems to be working.
I know, yeah.
It's Waistcoat Wednesday. That is unacceptable.
Yeah. Fabio Capello has commented on Gareth Southgate's
side. I love this.
Side.
Great dig, this.
Big
nice.
Fabio.
Nice.
Southgate understood he'd go home with two central defenders, so he put in three. He's finally found a goalkeeper who saves, too.
Oh,
my goodness.
And as we know, Italy are slow starters. We might still see them in the tournament.
Big Fabio, of course, despite his efforts, Russia got to the quarterfinal of the World Cup.
Yeah. Mm.
My goodness, eh? Yes, England versus Croatia, or Croatia versus England, as it's billed. I'm a bit nervy.
Yeah, same. I felt
it's strange. It is strange that in this stage of the tournament, England are still in it.
We're playing in white.
Yeah,
are we?
I'm superstitious about that. I don't like England playing in white. In fact, I don't like any team playing in white. I feel like there's an arrogance to it. Genuinely, teams like Real Madrid, you know, it's all about purity and imperialism.
Yeah. Preston North like End.
But England did invent the game, so if anyone could play white, it should
be. Is
that
why you hate Swansea City?
I don't hate Swansea City.
Is that why you hate Carlos Tevez?
Is that why you hate half of Newcastle United?
Yeah, half of Juventus.
And half of Sunderland, though, as well.
Is that why you hate the top of Portsmouth's legs?
Yeah, that is absolutely.
Sunderland got beaten by non-league darling.
Is that why you hate snowy
Sorry, Marcus. Sorry, Marcus. Pete was just getting... Go on, Pete. Do it again.
Go on, Peter.
Sunderland were beaten by non-league Darlington yesterday.
Can't believe we didn't open the show with that. On Waistcoat Wednesday.
And Lewis Carrius dropped a pretty easy ball yesterday against Tranmere. So just little league update.
Adam Lallana got the winner, though.
He did.
Joe Hart's back at Man City. Let's stop talking about club football.
Because it's underwhelming compared to what we're going to be facing tonight.
But it is strange at this stage of the tournament. It's a very welcome strange, by the way, that England are still in it. Because you normally, second round or quarterfinals or first round as well, they've gone. And when you cover the World Cup, you know, we've been watching pretty much all the games and so on. And you have a few days break. You kind of, all right, yep, back in now. And you think, oh, yeah, England are still in it.
Yeah. And
do
you remember Euro 2008 was a brilliant tournament because England weren't there. So it was almost like we were bang in the middle of that period where we've got so bad that we weren't even qualifying for tournaments. Mm-hmm. And it almost felt quite relaxing to just go, well, I haven't got to worry about England. Just enjoy it. Pick a team. And so now we've gone the other way. Well, and England are still in the mix-up with just three teams left. It does feel odd. I woke up this morning feeling very nervous indeed. And I
was, not a blues song.
No. and I was it's a really English blues song.
I was worried that the train was going to leave on time.
It's on the same album as My Wife Left Me, But She Was a Little Bit Annoying, so I'm not too bad.
It is my fault.
Yeah. And the part, I was talking to Jim briefly about this, and England is talked about a lot in the context of 1966.
And 1990 as well.
Well, we're going to come on to that. 1966 is the one that's always talked about. That these guys are legends. They'll always be legends because it's the only time we've won it. And there is no ghost to sort of exorcise there because we won it, right? Mm-hmm. To me, this is about exorcising the demons of 1990, where if England had won that semi-final, they would have been hot favourites to win the whole thing, and they came so close. Mm. And I have, as someone who grew up and watched football for the first time really around World Cup 90. Mm. I've always held that in high esteem and I've always enjoyed that, and nostalgia about it has always been great. But it's got to the point now, and it only sort of started to happen today when I woke up, that England were in another semi-final. Mm. Well, I've instantly just become really pissed off and impatient and annoyed by this talk of World Cup 90 all the time. Mm. And that's the thing we have to get over.
Absolutely.
That's the thing that we talk about. And I think, actually, if England are going to take responsibility and think of themselves as a great footballing nation again, they need to get over the fact that they got to a semi-final.
Yes.
There was a discussion on the radio yesterday with Gary Lineker, Chris Waddle, presented by Mark Chapman, and it had Jürgen Klinsmann in it. Yeah. And the thing that brought me, and it was about World Cup 90 semi-final, yeah. Of course they all played in that. And the thing that brought it home for me was that Jürgen Klinsmann just sounded completely bemused to even be there. Why am I talking about a semi-final almost 30 years ago? Mm. But for England, that's as good as it gets. Mm. And I think that, if we are going to hold ourselves up as a great footballing nation again, that's the sort of problem we've got to get rid of.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Well, we've got to start changing that. And obviously, we've been talking for years on this very podcast about how there needs to be more joined up thinking at youth level. And you know, just getting some consistency throughout those teams. And by effectively dumb luck, we've had that, whereas Southgate has been there and it's working. And this should be, you know, this should be a lesson, really, of how we move forward.
I don't think it is dumb luck. I think Southgate was given a job as head of development about 5 or 6 years ago, and he's been involved in doing that.
No, but I mean that he's in charge.
We have an awful lot to thank for those undercover reporters who took those photos of Sam Allardyce. I mean, they're the real unsung heroes.
As they so often are. This tournament is so in my head that last night I was having an anxiety dream about something unrelated, right? And then Gareth Southgate turned up in a self-driving car, showed me how it worked, and effectively reassured me that the future would be okay. With, you know, I suppose that technology being a metaphor. Yes, he was in a waistcoat.
Thank you.
He was in what he wears.
A self-driving waistcoat.
And the reason I mentioned the 1990 thing is because England needs to not fall into that trap of thinking, we're in a semi now. Mm. Whatever, and it is true, by the way, whatever they do now, if they narrowly lose tonight or whatever, they're going to come home and they're going to be celebrated. Yeah. And for what they've achieved, I have no problem with that at all. Mm. I think that's fine. But it's not for the players to think in those terms. They should be thinking about, right, here we are. Yeah. Here's where we want to move on. And to be fair, I think a lot of the players I've heard in the lead up to this game have been a lot more professional than perhaps some of the fans have, who are very, very happy to celebrate us being in the semi-final in the first place, which I don't have a problem with, because it's fandom is fandom. But the players need to make sure they execute again and focus properly.
However, how many of them were actually born in 1990?
Well, this
you know
is
what
it,
I mean?
Like,
A
lot of them aren't tainted by that. And also, I think it was Dele Alli again I saw talking about how looking at Twitter and looking at all the Three Lions memes and how everyone's going absolutely crazy at home is really spurring them on and really motivating them. So actually, I guess we're in a generation that has a different mindset now, where all the stuff that, you know, we sit here in our 30s worrying about it, meaning they're going to underestimate people, is wrong. That's not how they think it spurs them on.
But also, like, my first World Cup was 94, so I personally am untainted by the 1990 World Cup semi-final. So, like, I'm nervous for other reasons.
I've seen things.
Well, I rewatched the Iceland match because I'm a sadist,
a masochist,
and just seeing Dele Alli and Harry Kane trying to put the ball in the net at the end of the match, I was like, they've seen the bad times.
that was only 2 years ago.
I know, it's
mad. Involved a lot of the same players as well.
Yeah.
But how do we think the actual game itself is going to go, though? What, thinking about when the game actually starts, what are we looking for?
Yeah, all the chat, of course, about the Croatia side is on their two central midfielders.
Yeah.
Understandably so. And my worry, from an England point of view, was if Modric and Rakitic really turn up, they could find a lot of space in that England midfield. Dele Alli and Jesse Lingard are primarily forward players. You know, Dele Alli plays just off a striker normally.
Alli's tough, though, which will work in our favour.
He is. Jesse Lingard often plays on the wing or in an advanced position. Now, they've done well, but England haven't had that much going up against them. Colombia did. We shouldn't forget that.
I mean, Ali's played most of this tournament injured. Let's make that very clear.
Yeah, but he got his goal, which is going to give him a lot of confidence. My concern would be Rakitic and Modric, when they've played against their last two games against Denmark and Russia, those two sides have been very defensive. And they've been very aware of the threat that Croatia pose. We saw against Argentina, when you give them a little bit of space. I know they're a lot more tired now because of the minutes they've played. Mm. But my concern would be that England will leave space. They will, because England like to push forward, and England defensively aren't brilliant. And that's where Croatia could get a bit of joy. However, on the other side of that, Croatia haven't had that much thrown at them in the last two games. And they've been... Their defence has had a fairly... not relaxed time, but they've not had to be all hands to the pump playing a Brazil or something like that. They will have more going up against them against England. Raheem Sterling's pace will be a big concern of theirs. They won't be able to push up too much and so on. So the midfield battle is key. I think Southgate will stick with that starting 11 that he's played against most of the teams, which has served England well, but we shall see if it will serve them well against Croatia. Because of course, if Rakitic and Modric and Brozovic and Perisic and the other talented players they have in there start overrunning England, people say, "Well, you should have put Dier in there, or you maybe should have put Delph in there as well." But I think England have to be positive and take advantage of the fact that Croatia are knackered as well.
Yeah, I think they'll start off with the same team, but he'll be looking at, you know, Dier, Delph, and possibly even Ruben Loftus-Cheek coming off the bench, because he's a strong player that can carry the ball forward.
He's got no fear. Loftus-Cheek. I really enjoy him coming off the bench and kind of it does present something a little bit different. He is very imposing.
He glides through games,
And you're looking at someone like Henderson. Like he looked a bit pagged by the last time he played, and there's rumours that he might possibly be injured.
Yeah,
so.
And knock as well.
So it's, you know, it's all up in the air at the moment. I think that you're right though. Southgate should start with the same lineup that started the last match.
I like the matchups. I like that if you look at the key areas of Croatia's attacking threat, particularly, actually not just attacking threat, just the matchups in general. Perisic goes up against Trippier and Walker. Trippier particularly has been fantastic, and Perisic they like to attack on the left. Croatia, we know that. Mandzukic goes up against Stones and Maguire, who've been very, very good, good for us. You've got Cioluk, who's probably going to have to start right back for Croatia against Young, who's had a decent tournament, and you've got Kane going up against Lovren, who I think he can dominate him, and I think Sterling can also hurt them with pace. I also think, in terms of the Henderson thing, they're only going to play 3-1. It's essentially a 3-1-4-2. Well, Maguire, what tends to happen when Croatia have the ball, or when another team has the ball against England, is Trippier and Young come right back, so it's almost like a back five, and you see Maguire step into midfield, so you see like a two in front of a four. So Maguire will step in to help out Henderson anyway. The question for Croatia to answer is whether they want to play with a holding midfielder behind those two, or whether they want to play with someone just in front of them. I don't think, and I know it's risking tempting fate and all that other stuff, but just for those superstitious people out there, what I think isn't going to affect this.
No,
game.
Absolutely not. Yeah, the chat in this podcast won't have an influence.
I don't think that Rakitic and Modric are suddenly just going to click against England. And I also think England are younger, have played fewer minutes, and have got more legs. And towards the end of the game, particularly if it goes to extra time, you'd have to have England as favourites. And I think England are probably favourites anyway. But what it comes down to is two key things, I think. One is how much nervous energy they expel today, England, and how nervous they are. And from what I've seen, they look okay. And two, whether they can actually execute this game plan again. I still think England have got another gear to go, purely because I spent quite a lot of the Sweden game frustrated that they weren't... the final ball was quite poor. Yeah. The final decision was quite poor. They didn't take chances. The reality is, and I can say this because England went through comfortably anyway, against Sweden, England probably could have scored 6 or 7 goals. They had quite a lot of really good clear-cut chances. Yeah. Now, a lot of them fell to Sterling, which a lot's been made of. But on another day, England score again and again and again.
Also, I think
there's a real chance there. And very, very quickly, finally, a lot of talk about set-piece goals. A huge amount of set-piece goals have been scored this tournament, and England are the best set-piece team in this tournament.
Mm. What I was going to say was a lot of the reason that England could have scored more was because of Raheem Sterling as well. You know, he won a lot of corners. He was very, very busy. He scared that defence. And it's really frustrating to see people just saying, oh, he was terrible against Sweden. He wasn't terrible. Did his job really, really well.
You may as well get angry. This is the media, you know what I mean? Yeah. They don't like
it. It's not just that. It's the fact that people who don't know as much about football as other people, who watch it because it's the World Cup, what's the most obvious thing you can notice?
Oh, I'm kind of done with watching. I'm sure a lot of other people are. I'm kind of done with watching football in a pub. Can't see the telly. You can't get a beer.
But Pete,
around me is a nightmare person.
I've had a totally different experience in the pub. I've bloody
because
loved it.
How do you think that pub feels when Pete Donaldson walks in? England are 8-13 favourites to qualify for the final. £10 with Bet365 returns £16.15, including stake. And very quickly before I forget... talks about Harry Kane there, how important he'll be. Would you one of those goals where he just gets the ball 2 or 3 yards outside the air and just rifles it in the bottom corner? To me, that is the trademark Harry Kane goal, if there is such a thing. And we haven't seen one of those yet.
We
might see one of those tonight. Harry Kane is 10-3 to score first in this one with Bet365. So £10 returns £43.33, including stake, should he find the net before anyone else. And that has to be in 90 minutes, of course.
Lads, I'm very very excited.
Same.
Yeah. It's a football match. I can really get behind it.
If I could just choose one thing to happen, it would be England start off really brightly, score after 15 minutes, score again after half an hour, and then again after half-time, just score again.
Again on 75.
If we could score, if we could be 3-0 up with 10 minutes left, I'll be very happy. Yeah. I will break open the beer.
Two minutes sent off as well in that time.
First minute. Croatia do a Colombia against Japan.
No, Croatia don't turn up. And England are given the, given the match. I think that would be ideal. But anyway, we've talked about the two semi-finals, which I've dubbed the warm-up in this show. Now we talk about Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah. He's overshadowed everything.
Yeah. Headline. Contractually obliged to make sure he's the main event.
It's amazing. He didn't want to go.
Yeah.
But no, we're not going to talk about that because we're still loving international football.
Well, we've got on the concert.
Sod off, Cristiano. We're not falling for that.
We've got on the concert later in the week, so maybe we'll get around to it then.
Perhaps we will. Perhaps we will. So there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the World Cup Ramble, sponsored by Bet365.
We are either going to be there's going to be no in between on the next show. It's either going to be amazing or it's going to be pick yourself off the floor time. Like the time when I had to almost physically prop Marcus up when England conceded late against Russia in Euro 2016.
And we drew that game.
Yes. Yeah, that was a draw.
We weren't even out.
Yeah.
But it's funny though, isn't it? Just to finish, before we say cheerio, we haven't been in this situation while we've been doing the podcast.
No.
Every England tournament, 2010, 12, 14, 16, has ended quite in a disappointing manner.
Yeah, Marcus, we haven't been in this situation in our adult lives.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Hugely.
Are the times of our lives.
You were in 96. I can remember being, I was watching with my pals, I would have been 15, and I remember being so nervous towards about 5 minutes from the end of extra time. Mm. I couldn't actually stand it. I had to leave and go back to my house and watch the penalty shootout on my own.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, World Cup 90 and Euro 96, I was living in Scotland.
Oh, Jesus. So, can I just say,
Jesus.
When I did that, I am no more emotionally mature now than I was then.
Yeah, true enough.
Particularly with football, you're the same, aren't you?
But you drink more responsibility.
Yeah.
More responsibility? More
drink more responsibility.
I think we'll end it on that. Drink more responsibility.
Yeah.
Responsibility is a new lager I'm bringing out. So there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Say goodbye, Luke Aaron Moore.
Listen, God bless. Godspeed. All the English fans listening out there listening, we are with you. Let's be together. Let's be strong. And let's execute our fandom the same way the players will execute their game plan. By which I mean, please don't trash an IKEA.
If you're a gala, you're listening, get in that hot air balloon or whatever you're in and get above that stadium because we need you.
Pete, are you still planning on sacrificing your metatarsals at the altar of football in the studio?
I brought a hammer. I brought like a ritual hammer.
We'll get cracking with that in a minute.
Right. Excellent.
Literally.
Say goodbye, James Edward
Campbell. Oh, no, he is!
No, I was trying to remember his middle name.
Oh.
And he did. Yes. Yeah. Sort of.
But you forgot his first name.
Yeah. No, James is what he's christened, isn't he?
Goodbye and come on, England.
Petey Diddley Donaldson. Say
guys,
goodbye.
I'm at a five.
Finally at a five. Could be at a one tomorrow. Plummeting down.
Marcus.
Yeah.
Christopher Speller.
Let's
goodbye
be positive.
From me.
Let's be positive.
Let's be very positive. And it's goodbye from London.
I just want to get a final thought, a Jerry Springer type final thought from Marcus.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah, yeah. Let's have a final
happened
thought.
Last time and it was lucky for us.
And now for my final thought.
Thank you.
Play well. Use your energy. Use your pace. Get the world in motion. Love makes the world turn round, and for crying out loud, bring it home.
Can I give you a final thought?
Hi, I'm Kevin Keegan, and you're listening to the Football Ramble.
London, goodbye! London, goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.